Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And hi there. Good morning. Here we are in December. It just seems like it was last week that we were all talking in November, yes. And here we are, a new month.
Because it was just
it was.
It was, yes. We're just barely into December. December 2nd today.
Yes.
Woo! Yes, and welcome to the show. We might have a little Christmassy holiday sprinklings of music throughout the show, too.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, as we get ready for things. First of all, let me give you that phone number to call in with your questions for the doctors, both Dr. Samira Umat here today and Dr. Jerry Mixon. And the number to get through early on the show, we don't want to miss anybody. It's always best, and that's when the phone lines are open. So don't be shy. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. That is the number to call and get through if you've got questions about what's going on with your health. Dr. Mixon, you are looking at a lot of information this morning. Any medical updates we need to know about?
Yes, you have some information from China, don't you?
Oh, man. Yeah. And I think it's
I sometimes
COVID
get scared
related.
When I hear there's more news from China. Really, now what did they do?
What did they do now?
Well, yes. I sometimes wonder if Xi and Putin are chatting.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. Don't you think so?
They're best friends with an unlimited. Or does that just?
But you know,
does that just apply to killing Ukrainians?
I don't know, Jerry.
Anyway,
but you sometimes wonder how much of what you hear on the media is really the truth. You know, people, I don't know.
What? You would doubt the media?
We don't know what's going
on.
No,
we don't. No, we don't.
We have no idea.
Yeah. Well, China has got a big issue right now. The government, of course, is minimizing it and saying, nah, it's not really a problem. But the word coming out of hospitals in large areas of China are that they're seeing a lot. Lots of kids with pneumonias and fairly significant pneumonias with some of these kids. And the question is, what's going on? Is this yet a new virus, quasi-COVID this time that hits kids instead of old folks? Mm. Or is this something less worrisome? Mm-hmm. I think it's less worrisome. The best I can put together right now is that they had a much longer, more severe lockdown than we did in America. I mean, not even New York was anywhere near the Chinese. I mean, they literally had people starve to death in their apartments because the government had bolted their doors shut. They couldn't get food. That's really pretty pathetic. Whole apartment buildings, and these are often 20-story buildings with hundreds of apartments, they would only allow one person per floor to leave for 1 hour each day to buy groceries for all the people on their floor.
I had no idea about any of this.
Yeah, and that went on for 3 years in places. So, we had a problem here when we stopped the lockdowns in some of the blue states, and all of a sudden there was a big resurgence of RSV and influenza, because the kids had not been catching it. It's normally a very common childhood illness. And so we normally spread those out over a couple of years, but then we locked the kids down, put them all in masks. We sent them back to school, and they caught their RSV.
Yeah.
So we had a surge of RSV and flu that lasted, you know, a couple of months until we worked our way through the backlog. Mm. And then it's reduced back down to what we usually see in the winter now in the States. Their lockdown was far more severe than ours and lasted much longer. And so what I'm guessing we're seeing there is now the consequences of that very severe, very long lockdown. And all those children are now immuno-naive. Mm. They didn't get the childhood diseases, and now they're all catching them at once.
Right.
So I don't see any evidence that it's a new virus coming out of China.
Well, let's hope for the best, yeah. Right?
Yet.
Yeah. Yet. Yeah.
I don't see any evidence yet. Yeah. I hope that becomes a long term.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one to watch, but one not to get terribly, terribly excited about.
Right. I mean, it is the time for viruses anyway.
Yes,
and
it is.
So we have seen that, like you said, here too, but here it was.
And, but now we're in flu season.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. And then, you know, I keep hearing about them recommending the RSV vaccine for 60 and older. And
yes.
So certainly if you are exposed, you're immunocompromised, you're at risk, make your own decision. But it's probably wise, especially if your lung capacity is compromised. The last thing you want is a virus that affects the lung and to affect your breathing. So
that's right. Yeah, the problem that that I think we've got in perception of vaccines, and this mistake was booted around a lot during the COVID epidemic by people that were against the COVID vaccine.
Mm.
And that is, the only real vaccine is a vaccine that will protect you forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there are almost no real vaccines. Mm-hmm. Because diphtheria, tetanus and stuff, yeah, protects you for about 10 years.
Right.
That's why you need to get your DPTs about every 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, we have shingles infections. Well, they don't protect you forever. You live long enough, that vaccine will wane. Chickenpox virus, you bothered or helped us a lot when we were kids, but we start developing shingles, which is a chickenpox outbreak again, after 60 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Flu vaccines protect us for about 6 months.
Right.
That's why we need to get one every winter or fall, because that's flu season.
Mm-hmm.
The COVID mm-hmm. vaccine protected us about 5 months.
Yeah. Pneumococcal vaccines.
Yeah. All of these vaccines, some protect you longer than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know of any vaccines that protect you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just as we get older, our immune system becomes less and less competent. And the things we were protected from when we were young, we're no longer protected from.
Right.
It's just the way it works.
Right.
So, you know.
You know, the vaccine almost eradicated smallpox.
Yes.
But polio too. But now I think there's a resurgence of some polio.
Yeah.
In some countries.
In some countries. Mostly the Middle Eastern countries. There was a big problem of it in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And that was because the Taliban and ISIS both, the very, very anti-Western jihadis, were passing around the word that the polio and the polio, measles, and there was one.
Measles, mumps, rubella,
yeah,
MMR.
The Western vaccines were actually not vaccines to protect you, but they were a plot to sterilize Muslims.
Mm. Mm.
So that they would wipe out the entire Islamic population by sterilizing their children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As a consequence of that, the people that believed what the mullahs there were telling them didn't get their kids immunized.
Mm.
And now in those countries, we are seeing a resurgence
of polio.
Of polio.
Yeah, we came so close to eradicating it.
Yes.
Such a stigma against polio, too. It's contagious as well. So.
And the fact that polio is now back in the world, because we had not had a case for years, there's always the risk that it will come to the United States again.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have gotten complacent about polio immunization here because, well, there hasn't been a case in America for a generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would I be exposed against something that never happens?
Right.
Well, that's why.
Yeah.
You know, we have 10 million illegal immigrants that have come into the country in the last 3 years.
Mm.
It's appalling. You know, under Mr. Biden, 10 million unvetted people about whom we know nothing about their disease status or their immunizations or what diseases they might even be carrying, they're just not vetted.
Mm.
They come in, they say, I'm here for amnesty. All right, show up for your court case about 3 years from now.
Mm.
Let's put you on a bus and send you somewhere. And that's it. So, you know, it is a public health disaster in the making.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing we can do is we protect our own families, make sure your kids and grandkids get their immunizations,
yeah.
Even against things like polio that we have not been seeing in America, because these diseases are making resurgence in the world. And if we let all kinds of people in the U.S. without checking their disease status, it's going to come back here. You know, when my wife immigrated 20 years ago, she had to provide documentation that she'd never been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
She had to get a health exam here in the United States. She had to be tested
mm-hmm.
for all kinds of diseases, everything from tuberculosis and so on. She had to be checked for all of the sexually transmitted diseases before they would let her come to this
wow.
country because they were. She was a young, attractive woman, and they were afraid she might be trafficked as for prostitution.
Oh. Mm.
Okay. In fact, when we went for our interview, she was asked by the federal interviewer whether or not she had come to America to be a prostitute.
Wow. Wow.
I'm okay. sitting there, you know, as he asks my wife whether or not she's a whore. I had an atavistic urge, but I decided that slapping the federal interviewer upside the head was probably going to enhance her getting approved.
That's true. Wow.
So, you know, I kept my hands in my lap and simply balled up my fists, thought unkind words about his genealogy.
You know. Wow. But they're picky about that. My husband just 5 years ago had to re-get all of his childhood shots because he did not have record. His parents didn't have a
yes.
record.
So yeah, if you come in the country legally,
yeah.
you know, you're vetted, you're checked. They make sure you have your vaccines. And if you don't have the records, you're right. You
nope.
have to get them all again.
Yeah.
But if you let the drug cartels bring you in, so what?
There you go. No biggie.
Know, all we ask is that you voluntarily show up for your deportation hearing in 3 years. How many are we going to show up? None.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, well.
All right.
That's the way it goes.
That's what's going on. Ooh, I hear Christmas music.
Hey, let's hear it for Christmas.
We're going to take a break, and then we are going to dive into some calls. Robert, we'll be talking with you in just a moment, continuing on the same topic or a similar topic. Here is that number to get through with your call, 206-421-5757. Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio, Dr. Samira Umat too. My name is Lynette, and we are taking your calls. Stand right here in Seattle. Robert has a question for us. Hi there, Robert. Welcome.
Hello, Robert.
Good morning. Thank you. My question, I'll ask an ancillary question first, just out of curiosity. I want to jog my face and arms and legs. They never turn red. I become a little jealous. I see people out jogging and their whole body turns red, flush. I wish my body would do that, but my body looks like a codfish.
You know? Oh, dear.
And the other question is, I don't know why that is. I mean, I imagine it's natural. But the other question is about the pneumonia, and that is, I'm wondering, I'm a little suspicious of this pneumonia because it's like deja vu with COVID out of China, you know, when they initially said,
yes.
well, unless you're old, don't worry about it because only old people get it. Mm. Well, now they're saying, well, don't worry about it because only young people get it. But I don't understand if it's a, due to a lockdown. Everybody was locked down, not just children. So
that's
it
right.
Seems like so I don't know why children are just getting the pneumonias. And a further question about that is, I'm curious about pneumonia vaccines. Now, I have had two. And in 2015, I had a Prevnar 13.
Uh-huh.
And in 2017, I had a
Pneumovax
23.
Yeah.
Are those the only two I need? And are they still good from 15 and 17? Or should I get another one?
15's been 8 years.
Yeah.
You're probably running up against the upper limit of your protection. You know, within the next year or two, you might consider getting a repeat. I'm going to have Samara get online here and look at the recommendation for repeating
those.
Give me a few
minutes, yeah.
So while she's doing that,
we'll
chat.
There are two different types. There's a 13 and a 23.
That's
I don't
right.
Whether I should
yes.
get both again
yeah.
or whether I
well,
should
and these
go
are
on.
These are yeah, these are serotypes.
Yeah.
And like I said, she's going to look up the pneumococcus pneumonia vaccines here and get us some more information on it. Let me revert back to the situation in China, though. The reason I'm postulating that it's the kids is because we saw a similar thing here. Everybody got locked down. The kids were protected from getting the typical childhood illnesses like RSV and so on. When we unlocked them, those children did not have antibody to the childhood illnesses. And so they caught them at a greatly accelerated rate. And we saw some kids being admitted to the hospital here and a whole lot of RSV and a big surge in flu, even out of season. And that was just because the children did not have protection because they had been locked down. Grown-ups were locked down too, but we have protection because we caught these diseases as kids. So we still have protection or some protection against them. Now, the very elderly have probably lost much of their RSV protection. And that's why they're recommending young people and old people get RSV along with their flu. In China, they were locked down longer and harder than we were. And so I think what's happening is they have a larger cohort of children that don't have antibody to the common childhood illnesses. And so now that they're unlocked, I think there's a big pile of children that are getting sick with these viruses. I don't see any indication yet that it's a new virus, but I have emphasize the word yet. You know, if I see any indication that there's a new virus creeping out there, I will certainly be spreading the alarm. But right now, my best guess is that it's fairly innocuous. Okay, Samara, what did you find about revaccinations with the
pneumococcal vaccine? It depends upon which one you got and what the strain was. Prevnar 20 is supposed to provide protection, better protection than the Pneumovax 23. And the Pneumovax 23's effect is about 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And the other one is about 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was why 10 years were sticking in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So the Pneumovax
20. Depends on which one you got, what strain you got, and how old you are. So less than 65, you don't have to worry about it if it's within 10 years. If your age is more than 65, then you need to go find out.
Yeah.
So 5 to 10 years is the range.
I got the 13 and the 23, so it sounds like I should go like somebody should go request a
20. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. What about my blood issue with the flushing face?
I'd be interested to see a couple of things on you. I want to know what your hemoglobin and hematocrit are.
Mm.
Because that flushing that we get is from vasodilatation, the blood vessels in our skin. If we exercise, our muscles are generating heat. And so we dilate the blood vessels in our skin to radiate that heat off and let it be picked up by sweat. The water running down our face picks up, you know, the heat energy and dumps it on the ground. So that flush is a function of how much heat you're generating, how hard you're working, and how many red blood cells you have available. And so if you are, if your hemoglobin hematocrit, that is the counts of your red cells are low, you may not flush as much. The other thing is your nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a chemical produced in the lining of our arteries that dilates the blood vessels. It causes them to open up and let more blood flow through. A man in his 60s has lost about 93% of his capacity to make nitric oxide. That's part of why older men have erectile dysfunction. They can't dilate the blood vessels in their genitalia as much. That's why we tend not to flush as much. But we also then don't get the blood supply to our muscles and our heart and our brains, which is why we have increased, part of why we have increased risk of strokes and heart attacks. And we can't work out as much because we don't have as much muscle, and the muscle we've got is not getting as rich a blood supply with exercise because we can't dilate the blood vessels as well. So a couple of things we do. If you were in our clinic, we check your nitric oxide. How much are you producing?
Yep.
And if you're not producing enough, we give you something to kick your dose up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we do your laboratories and your blood tests, we're always looking to see what your hemoglobin and hematocrit are, see how many red cells you've got.
That's right.
So I'm guessing
when you test for the when you test for the nitric oxide, do you use a test other than the strips?
Nope, that's all you really need. Because that'll tell you if your nitric oxide levels are adequate or not. Mm-hmm. If they're low, we'll put you on something to kick your production up.
Yeah, I use the strips. Sometimes it's low, sometimes it's high. I go 3 days.
Okay.
Low.
Yep, and that may depend in part on your diet. You know, if you're eating things that have a lot of nitrites, you're probably producing more nitric oxide those days. If your diet is deficient in nitrites, then you're probably not going to make much.
Or, you know, maybe some medications, too.
Yeah.
Could be either depleting you or helping you.
Or if you're taking a PDE5 inhibitor for erectile disorder, the days you're taking that, you're inhibiting the destruction of nitric oxide. So you keep what you've got longer and better.
Yeah.
So,
okay, thank you.
All right. Okay.
Very
thank you
good.
For the call, sir. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much, Robert.
Yeah, that was a new one, flushing with exercise. Yeah,
sweat and flushing. I don't think we've had that call before.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to head south to Tacoma. Paul is on the line for us. Hi there, Paul. Good morning.
Hello, Paul.
Good morning, everybody. I have prostate cancer and I'm on Keytruda. When I started Keytruda, I noticed that my white blood cell count dropped from 7 to 5.
Yep.
What's it about?
Well, Keytruda is
an immunoglobulin, and it's an immunosuppressant drug, so that's why it does that. So it increases your likelihoods of infections.
Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, it is one of the better drugs for the castrate-resistant prostate cancers. But it is an immunosuppressant, and these are just side effects of the medication. The question, of course, is what is the trade-off? You know, tell me about your prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it spread? What's your situation?
No, it's just been invasive. It's from the bladder to the rectum.
Okay, so yeah, so it is metastatic. It has spread. All right.
I had a PET CT scan done, and it showed that that was in June. It showed then that it hadn't spread anywhere else.
Oh, anywhere else, but yeah. But if it's in the rectum and it's in the bladder, that's two separate sites. So, you know, it's a non-metastatic prostate cancer is restricted to the prostate itself. And so if it has spread outside of the prostate, we've got a metastasis problem. And usually the Keytruda would be used for people that they have a non-testosterone-dependent cancer, so that it doesn't matter if your testosterone is high, low, or indifferent, the cancer is still going to spread. And those types of tumors tend to be far more aggressive than the testosterone-sensitive tumors. So, you know, they tend to spread earlier and wider. So let's hope the Keytruda gets it under control for you.
Well, they're keeping me on Lupron.
Mm. Okay.
That and the story is that Keytruda is supposed to be a 2-year regimen.
Yeah.
After that, they stop.
Yep. Well, the Lupron, of course, is only good at lowering your testosterone, and by lowering your testosterone, if it were a testosterone-sensitive tumor, it should stop growing for a while. But if you need both the Lupron and the Keytruda, that tells me that this tumor has either on genetic studies is not testosterone sensitive, or the testosterone inhibition stopped being effective for it. It started growing again. And of course, I don't know which one of those it is because I don't have all your records. All I can do is guess. So we hear the music. We got to take a little break, but we'll be back in about 1 or 2 minutes.
All right. Stay right there. We'll be back with you, Paul. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Let me give you the phone line. The phone lines are open. Here's the number to call. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
No.
Except for the occasional forest birds.
That's right.
Yuletide carols
being sung
by choir.
Oh, the sounds of Christmas. I love this.
Right.
Welcome back, Leading Edge Medicine.
I've been known to put on Christmas music in August, you know that.
Have you really?
To get ready for
it.
I just like the music.
Is that because you were in Iceland in August last year, maybe? That's why. I don't know. I'm Lynette.
That was July.
Yes, that's probably why, all the snow and ice. Dr. Umat here and Dr. Mixon here. We've been talking about Keytruda with Paul from Tacoma. We'll continue that.
Okay.
There we go.
Hi.
Hello, Paul.
Hello.
So anyway, that's what we think is going on. What else do you need?
Well, concerning the RSV shot, is it okay if I get that?
Should be, yeah.
And the pneumonia shot? I haven't had both.
You know?
I don't know.
Just check. We the question is, are any of these live viruses? Because the Keytruda will suppress your immune response, so that if you were to get a live virus, you might actually get a form of the disease. So, yeah. So let her do a little typing here. I don't think either of those are live viruses, though, but. We'll have to wait and see.
She's typing quickly.
Okay. Yes, right.
I doubt about that. Well, it's important. RSV shot.
You're right. Inactivated vaccines, including pneumococcal and meningococcal vaccines, are recommended for specific patients.
Yeah. Okay. So apparently they're all right.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yep.
What did you talked about the nature of my cancer.
Yeah.
How do I go about finding the exact nature of it? Give me I don't quite understand.
To really get the exact nature, you need a piece of the tumor. And so, you know, at some point, your physicians need to have done a biopsy and just pinched off a little piece of the cancer and then not fixed it in formalin. Because the formalin will denature the protein and destroy the DNA. So what they have to do is they do a frozen section or something like that where it's preserved. They use a different preservative from formalin, ship it off to the pathologist who has it sliced and they take little pieces of it and run the genome and do a full genome study on the cancer. And then they look at markers. There are particular markers that correlate with different degrees of aggressiveness of the cancers. And so that's really what you need is a genomic study on the cancer. It gives them a lot of guidance about what will and won't work on this particular tumor. I would think that, I think that these days everybody would be doing it.
Keytruda is an appropriate thing. That's after they did some kind of DNA test. I tried reading it, and it means absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah, but that's probably what happened then. They did the DNA study on the tumor, and they said, okay, this falls within the parameters that Keytruda's got a good chance of working. So,
well, and it has. It's
good.
Below 0.04 as far as the testosterone goes.
Yeah, and you mean is the PSA.
Well,
and that's all good news. You know, it says that you're on a good drug combination and you've got this thing suppressed, and with luck, it'll actually shrink instead of grow. We hope.
Well, I sure thank you.
You're welcome, sir. You take care.
Thank you so much for your call, Paul. And you can call in too. Phone lines are wide open right now at 206-421-5757. Both doctors in the studio, and we're live. Would love to talk with you. We're headed to Kent now to talk to Ken. Ken from Kent. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Hey, Ken. Are you married to Barbie?
I'm having a ball, I gotta tell you.
Oh boy, you opened a can of worms, Dr. Mixon.
Well, you know, some guys are married to Barbie, some guys are just dating her, who knows?
Did you go see Barbie, by the way?
No.
Okay. How could we help you, Ken?
How could we help you, Ken? Yeah.
My dad was Ken, we won't make fun of you.
Question problem that I had a week or so ago. Concerning a kidney allopurinol testing results and whether or not I can reestablish the prescriptions that I was already on for a year. I went up and finally saw the doctor. Oh, my gosh. I learned back roads to Everett, and I am happy. I visited him. He's been taking care of me since my stroke. And the issue is chlorothalidone, allopurinol, and he wants me to get off of chlorothalidone. He has me on allopurinol, 200 milligrams. I'm only taking 100 right now because of after the visit. I want to see how things gel. I was feeling really bad until I got my prescription refilled 2 days, 3 days before the doctor appointment. I was taking chlorothalidone and allopurinol. I'm feeling good. Went in, talked to him, and he was just, well, I haven't seen you for 4 years, but he's been nice enough to give me these prescriptions. Bottom line is, he has me changing. He wants me off of chlorothalidone, which is 20 milligrams, I think it was. And then the allopurinol is still 200 milligrams. He wants me to go and increase my doxytocin from 2 to 4 milligrams and increase my lursartan from 25 to 50 milligrams a day. He says, continue allopurinol. Follow this. Don't eat anything irregular. Stay away from NSAIDs and low sodium diet and avoid dehydration. I'm doing all that.
Good.
I got to tell you, though, I ended endomethacin only because I'm at the end of my prescription allotment or a requested allotment I got a year ago. I took it when I couldn't get to the doctor and I had a gout attack. It was not so much from worry, it was just from sedentary, oh my gosh, it's winter. And so, yeah, I did.
Okay, sit tight. The music says we got to go to a break. But we'll finish up with you when we get back.
Yeah, okay? Ken, stay right there. Leading Edge Medicine will be back in just a moment. Thank you for listening. If you have a question for the doctors, here's that number. Phone lines are open at 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
And we're back with a little Christmas spirit now that we're into December. Loving that voice. Oh, nothing like it.
It is.
Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there and good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat in the studio, talking with Ken right now about what's going on.
All right, Ken.
Yeah, so what happened was the doctor took me off of chlorthalidone and indomethacin because I'd finished the prescription, right?
Yeah.
And so I got one tablet left. It's what saved me from a severe gout attack on my Achilles tendon. It stopped me from walking. Last point is he wants me to go on something. Colchicine.
Yeah.
Colchicine, yeah. Okay.
It's a steroid?
No,
it's not. It's a non-steroidal. Mm-hmm. It does much the same thing as indomethacin, actually, and is very good for gout attacks.
Yes, for acute attacks of gout.
Yeah. It's not to prevent gout attacks. It's if you get an attack.
It works very effectively, better than indomethacin.
Yes.
It's
a rescue drug.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, it's a rescue drug that is more effective than indomethacin. So your doc is taking good care of you. He told you, get off the things that work generally slower and have more adverse effects and use this one that we know that generally works better, it's faster. And, you got your allopurinol, you got your rescue drug, you should do kilpistetic.
Who?
Sorry,
a big doctor word for, I think your doctor's doing a good job with you.
Well, actually, copacetic.
It's like nephrologist.
Yeah, no. Copacetic actually came from my childhood. It was a something that Maynard G. Krebs used to say on Dobie Gillis.
Copacetic.
Yeah.
I thought it was like Barry Manilow.
And so back in the 1960s, when we were on our surfboards at the beach in the nights, we would, it was cowabunga, dude. That was copacetic.
Oh,
yeah.
Copacetic. Awesome. Oh, boy. Wow. So, Ken, thank you for your
once
call.
Once in a while, my youth just leaps right out of my mouth.
Oh, it's been leaping a lot today.
The good thing about it is, for some reason, I'm feeling fantastic. I'm
good.
Spinning, doing 360s the way I normally would have prior to my stroke. I'm a run around, get it all done kind of guy, but I used to have a problem with the balance. It's for some reason it's gotten a little
it's
better.
It's resolving. Good. Well, and practice your balance exercises. You can retrain parts of the brain to regroup some of that balance. So, put one hand on the wall and stand on one leg and then see if you can turn loose of the wall and for how long. Do that for however long you can each day, several times a day with each leg. Rebuild that balance, okay?
Yeah, boy, sure. I'm glad I don't have cancer. I'd pray for that, man.
All right.
All right. Hey, Ken, we got to run.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for your call.
My friend. Bye-bye.
We'll talk with you soon. Okay, we are going to Tacoma. We have Ray on the line. Hi there, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'm just calling back from your other program regarding the monoclonal protein. And before we start, I wanted to just tell Dr. Mixon, I bought my cardiologist his book.
Oh. Okay.
I did, and he was excited to get it, which surprised me because most of them don't want to even talk about what I'm doing outside of their little lane, you know?
Right. Okay, well, so, it'll be interesting to see if he becomes a patient.
There you go.
Well, I stuck a card in there for the Tacoma office.
Okay.
Oh, good recruiting there, Ray.
For you,
right. Ray. Thank you, yes. All right. Well, let's chat a little bit. Monoclonal antibody of the L or lambda type is usually a form of a multiple myeloma, a type of bone marrow cancer. And so, you know, that's why they want you off to the hematologist. There are drugs for this that are reasonably effective. So there are some forms of chemotherapy that work well for many people. You know, obviously,
it's not
the drugs,
curable, though, if it is myeloma.
Actually, there are some new therapies, the CRISPR therapies that are being tried for it that seem to have the potential to actually cure this. However, they are not in widespread use because it runs about $1 million per patient.
That's not my budget.
Yeah. Well, and Medicare kind of has a problem, you know, with $1 million medical bills. Yes. But, you know, once if it turns out that it works well, it'll get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper over time as the technology improves and gets more widespread. You know, right now it's a research tool, and it's only done at a very few places in the world, and, you know, it's the high price spread. But there are some medications that are pretty good. Mm-hmm. My stepfather had multiple myeloma.
Okay.
And they actually wiped it out. His monoclonal antibody returned to normal ranges, and mm-hmm. his bones, you know, the x-rays and stuff started looking normal. Mm-hmm. That was the good news. The bad news is the chemotherapy basically wiped out his brain and made him demented as hell.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So he didn't tolerate the chemotherapy, but it cured the multiple myeloma. Hopefully, of course, this was a while back. This was not in recent years.
Right, and the newer drugs are giving them better longevity results.
That's right. So the newer drugs are working better with fewer side effects because, you know, this was 30 years ago. This was a while back.
Well, you know, it's my neurologist is the one that ordered the testing. Uh-huh. It wasn't anybody else that even suspected anything, and I don't know what she was looking for, and I can't see her till January.
Mm. Yeah. Well, at least she ran a test and got an answer.
Right, right.
And so now we have to get you to the hematologist who can probably get you a cure.
Well, it's kind of scary, and I've got a lot of anxiety because of all my other symptoms. I've got just a multitude of symptoms, and I feel like I'm being treated like a hypochondriac, but they are real.
Yep.
You know?
I don't doubt that they're
loss
real.
And all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And the neurologist wants me to see an autonomic specialist in Kirkland, the only one around. I'm sure you know who he is.
No, I don't, but I haven't had occasion to send someone. But still, an autonomic nervous system problem, a guy would, you know, with your widespread symptoms that don't seem to fit a particular pattern, that's probably a great referral.
Well, you know, my blood pressure, you probably don't remember, like at 11:30 in the morning when I saw my endocrinologist, it was 82 over 67.
Yeah, no, I recall we talked about that. Yeah. No,
and when I stand up, it can drop 30 points, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I do agree. I do understand. Well, about all I can tell you at this point.
I don't have much of a life. I mean, I can't do anything because, you know, simple things like walking across the parking lot, I feel like I'm taking my life in my hands.
Yeah. Well, you came into three major bleeds. Yeah, you came into Tacoma, and you know, I sent the outline of all your problems. So hopefully they'll start doing some of the things we need to get done.
Well, you know, they didn't even know what monoclonal protein was. And neither did my cardiologist, and neither did my endocrinologist.
It's kind of a specialized, I mean, it's one of those things that I remember from way back in medical school. And then I had to refresh myself when my stepfather got the disease. Mm-hmm. And so, otherwise, I might not have known either. But, you know. All right. Well, thank you very much for your call, my dear. But the music says we got to go. But thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Phone lines are open, and here is the number to go to call. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We'd love to talk to you. Hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine on the way. Stay right there.